Quality Time broadcast.
I'm just going to do it one more time.
Quality Time, video games, all the girls, comedy and bitches. Quality Time, video games, all the girls, comedy and bitches.
When I found out that Ben Affleck came to the Galleria in DC to promote his new film Argo, I so wish I had been there with a guitar to play that song if he was anywhere near.
Yeah, do you think he hates that song deep down? Do you think like
probably because he's the douchiest actor next to
No,
say.
He's not douchey. Argo's a great film. Like he's made, you know what he is? He made some bad choices. He gets shit because he made Reindeer Games. Okay, Reindeer Games is a bad movie. He also made a couple of J-Lo films that were pretty bad, a couple of chick flicks. But honestly, his catalog as a whole, not bad movies. He was in Pearl Harbor. He was in Armageddon.
He might be an actually nice person to meet, but he has this aura of being as douchey as Tom Cruise.
Do you think he's as douchey as Tom Cruise?
I think he could be. He could be.
On a douche level, I would put Ben Affleck... I'd put his counterpart, Matt Damon, higher than him.
Yes,
instantly.
In real life, yes.
I'd put Tom Cruise higher than him. I would put I'd put a lot of actors that are more douchey than a Ben Affleck. I feel like Ben Affleck's down to earth. Like, he knows who he is. He's very self-aware.
He might be a fun-loving guy that just be your best friend instantly. Who knows?
Ben Affleck is fucking fun. Have you seen The Town? The Town is a great film.
See, to me, he'll always be the character from Mallrats, the upward guy. So, yeah.
Upward guys, whatever
the name of the shop was they worked at that I just got wrong.
That's great. Guess what? Welcome back to Quality Time, everybody.
He tries to have sex with you in a very uncomfortable place, so...
Oh, man. Welcome back to Quality Time. My name is Eric Woodworth. Thank you for joining us on the show today, the evening, whenever it is, your workout session. I'm not sure when you're listening, but you're here now, and that's all that matters. My name is Eric Woodworth. To my right is none other than my brother, Mr. Jeremy P. Woodworth. Jeremy, how are you doing, sir?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay.
I'm actually...
Eli Wallach tonight.
Eli Wallach.
We'll get you, Blondie.
Okay, Eli Wallach. I'm not even sure who that is, honestly.
On the greatest film of all time.
Wah, wah, wah.
He was the one of the three. So.
He was one of the bad guys.
He was the ugly.
That's awesome. Welcome back to Quality Time, everyone. No Kimberly Ambrose tonight, and we hope that she's doing well.
It is the mystery night, and there is a hole in our soul for you, Kim.
We messaged Kimberly Ambrose, and I suspect the worst, because I'm honestly taken back right now. I don't know where she is.
I hate to see this, but in my mind... I see her along Route 32 and a cop shooting her like a groundhog.
That's it.
That's pretty much what I envision in my mind.
That's what's happening to Kim right now. She made it into Carroll County and got shot like a groundhog.
And I'm crying in my mind.
Oh, God damn it.
She was trying to be the cop's friend, but she got shot by a cop.
Oh, good times, a lot of fun. Kimberly, wherever you are, I hope you're well, and we miss you terribly, and we're worried, and when I find out what happens, I feel like I've already made too much of it. Like, she either just forgot. I hope she just forgot the scheduling, because now I'm a little bit concerned.
And now I can't get as drunk as I normally do during the podcast, and I'm going to have to try to be funnier to make up for Kim's loss.
Right. Well, you better be on your P's and Q's. I need full Jeremy Woodworth, because right now, we're going back to old school right now. You realize this is like Quality Time episode one right now, where it's just me, my bro, talking about fucking sweet ass tits movies.
This is like the old times when I used to annoy my brother a hell of a lot more.
Well,
and he'd give me that look like, shut the fuck up. You're trying to get under my skin, and I know you're trying to get under my skin, and I still enjoyed it.
This is gonna be Robbie Robinson's least favorite episode of all time, Quality Time. That is That much I'm sure about.
You know, I think your podcast's pretty good, except for Jeremy. I hate him. He's a scumbag.
Well, listen, there is no quality time without Jeremy. When Jeremy dies, I don't know what happens with this podcast. It was called Quality Time because I wanted to spend quality time with my brother.
It's kind of like a show on 98 Rock that's Spiegel, Spiegel, and Spiegel. So,
do you want to know a funny story? So, a couple weeks ago, or last weekend, I did an impromptu show with Mickey Coachella, okay? You're familiar with Mickey Coachella, former 98 Rock show.
Never heard of him. Who the hell's that?
Very, very funny comedian. First of all, he's very funny, super talented.
Only held 98 Rock for like 15 years.
Well, I wouldn't say 15. He had a good like 7-8 year run, though. It was good.
I'm almost sure it was like 10 years.
I don't think it was 10. I don't think it was 10, but I could be wrong. Well, he had the night show, but on the morning show, he didn't have the morning show for that long. I feel like the morning show was only like a 5-6 year span, but maybe I'm wrong on that.
Well, you know, you had the Amelia years, which are a long time, but there was also the Jen years.
Yeah, there was Jen years. There's a lot of things. So I did a show with Mickey Coachella in Union Bridge, Maryland, which is in Carroll County, Gulf Country.
Do you know who the Jen's with now?
No.
Nikki 666.
Nikki 6!
Some band named Motley Crum.
Yes! So I went out to do this show because his feature act couldn't make the show. And luckily, it was in Carroll County. It's not too far from me. It was a fire hall. It was a packed house because, you know, Mickey draws a crowd, man. I mean, he's a big fucking deal. And I went to the show. I have a couple of really good stories from the show. Okay. One, or the very opening act, it was this girl, a young female comic named Christy Bellick. And she is a
they called her Belloc.
I would say she's a more liberal leaning feminist style comedian, and I tried to I tried to warn her before she went out. I was like, listen, Christy, we're out in God's country right now, okay? Like, you need to understand. Like, you need to understand your audience. I was just like, you're out in God's country right now. I mean, there was everything but a Blue Lives Matter flag at this place. There's camo everywhere. We're at a fire hall in Carroll County. Maybe I didn't say what you should say, but I was just like, just keep in mind your audience is this, right?
It's kind of like me when I perform at the Terra Cafe down in downtown Baltimore.
Exactly, right.
Whenever I tell my N-word jokes, I just keep an eye on the exit as fast as I can run. So
we get out there. She does her thing, and she's getting some good laughs. But she definitely makes a joke about the police, and I'll just let you know, this is a police loving crowd. Okay, so her set ends, and she did fine. After the show, while we're all hanging out, I'm talking to some of the locals, and you know, I'm very much in my element. You know, they ate me up out there, and they fucking I got like 15 friend requests after this show.
Please let me know this story ends with her being beaten senseless in the parking lot.
So I'm talking to some folks. I'm talking to these two real drunk ladies. Okay, after the show, and the one lady comes up to me and she was just like, you were so funny. Like, you were so great. You did this and like that. But let me tell you one thing. Your friend that opened up this show, she was not funny because my husband is a cop and I didn't like her joke. And I literally went, listen, lady, for the love of God, they're jokes, okay? Calm down. Like, they're jokes about things, and if you didn't like the joke, that's fine, but like, honestly, temper your goddamn emotions. As I'm having this conversation with this lady, Christy comes over and just interjects. Like, she doesn't know what she's walking into, and I did the right thing, okay? As she walked up, and I saw this really awkward conversation about to happen between everybody, I immediately walked away. Okay? So I walked away. I walked away and I like peeked back over and I was like, oh, shit is popping off. Like, I could see it getting a little bit, I get a little bit heated over there, right? So,
was a bottle instantly smashed in somebody's face?
No, there's no bottle smash. But a couple of minutes later, Christy comes up to me and she's like, hey, can you walk me out to my car? I'm not. I'm really not feeling comfortable right now. And I was just like, I looked at her, I was like, Christy, are you serious? Come on. Like, this is, these people aren't going to attack you. This is, there's no way that's going to happen. They just voiced their displeasure. She was like, I just don't feel safe. So I had to walk her back out to her car.
Wow.
Because I'm a very large gentleman. And, I mean, there was no incident at all, but she felt very unsafe. So, don't,
good
you know,
thing she didn't make the Trump joke.
Yeah, but by the way, Mickey gets up on his headlining set and shits on that same lady's feet for like 40 minutes. Like, your feet look fucking horrible. Like, shat on this lady, but don't talk about the police. Like, God, it was pretty ridiculous. So that was the thing that happened. Other story of note that happened that night. All right, so Mickey fucking crushes it, nails it out of the park, like he always does. But this part, man, I gotta be honest with you. It fucking tickled me pretty hard. Okay. At the end of the show, he does this thing where he's just like, a lot of comedians will do it. Like, if they're compared to somebody, right? Like, I opened up for this guy named Paul Zerdin once, and he's a puppet guy. And he came out and he did a thing. He was like, if you like my jokes tonight, my name is Paul Zerdin. If you didn't, my name is Jeff Dunham. Like, you just shit on Jeff Dunham. He does the same thing as you, right? So Mickey went for the same kind of joke, and he's like, if you enjoyed it tonight, my name is Mickey Zuccella. If you didn't, my name is Justin Schlegel. So he tried to shit on Justin, okay? Listen. Can I tell you how funny it was, though, the reaction?
Yeah.
I've never seen this happen to Mickey before in his life. People went, boo, like this, and he was just like... And one guy you can hear clearly go, not cool, man. We like Justin. I've never heard anything so funny in my life. Oh, God. It was so good. It was so good. So it was a very special moment up in...
He's the best thing on radio, you monster.
Yeah. I also got to watch Mickey make jokes in front of his children because he brought two of his children there.
Wow.
Who were like 11 and like, I don't know, like either 13 and 10 or I want to say 11 and 7.
There?
No girls. It was just his two younger boys.
You know, his girl was the one that was on Helen that is like, I'm going to kick her butt.
Did you call her Helen or
Ellen? The Ellen show. The Helen Back Show.
Just refer to the show Ellen as Helen. That's priceless. So, so he did jokes about him fucking his mom. And like, it's you understand, in front of his children, which was also, it was an extra added special show with Mickey. And God bless that little guy. I love him to death. And he's one of my favorite people to be around. And, it was overall a great show.
I saw him probably 10 to 15 years ago. And he was at the Harley place getting his head shaved for some charity or something. And he also said, this is the last time I'm smoking, you know. And next time, if you ever see me with a cigarette in my hand, I want you to just come up and punch me in the face. So then, 5 years later... I'm at the 98 Rock studio. Literally, he's smoking on the roof with Amelia. And I said, remember when we were at that Harley place? And you said to come up and punch you in the face. And he gets that half second like, I'm not going to punch you. You're like a local celebrity. He was at the top of his game. But at the same time, I'm like, who doesn't want to punch a celebrity in the face?
You should have just done it. If you're a real friend, you would have punched Mickey in the face.
Yeah.
That's the moral of the story.
Yeah. He told me to.
Yeah. Quick couple of things from last week's episode so we can revisit last week. Last week, we went over The Last Dragon. Was it The Last Dragon last? No, Braveheart. I'm sorry. Braveheart was last week. And I got my quickest ever Joe Robinson correction ever. Ever in my entire life.
Do you have the
life.
Joe Robinson theme music?
Can I give you one Joe Robinson correction, which was phenomenal here?
I did this music for Joe Robinson because I like him, and I saw him at the Regal in Laurel. He was seeing Avengers with his kid.
It was pretty... that was good. Yeah, tell us more about Joe Robinson, you seeing him with at the Regal Theaters.
He was... he's standing right next to me, and just as he's about to walk in, he's like, oh, Jeremy, what are you going to see? I'm like, I'm building a standee. And I had, what's her name? Tatiana, the chick.
Tatiana, yes. It was Tatiana.
Rashida Makeda.
Yes. Tiffany Haddish.
Tiffany Haddish.
There's nothing wrong with either of those names. There's no ethnicity. Tiffany's a... Jeremy. Some of the specialness that accompanies your words that come out of your mouth are just absolutely priceless.
I'm like a poet. So I'm building the new Kevin Hart movie, Night School, and I have a Kevin Hart standee and a Tiffany Haddish standee, life-size, which, of course, I was very close to being an asshole and walking in on the Avengers with the Tiffany Haddish full-size life seat. But I wasn't going to fuck with him seeing the movie, so, because that is really ultimately rude. So,
well, that's good. But then, of course, you did something extra, though.
Rob Mayer is very close with Tiffany now, so that's the whole thing with the Rob and Joe show.
Well, hopefully we can ruin that relationship with this podcast somehow, where... Rob is very close to being on the cusp of the next level, and you know what? One thing right here, we can flush it all down.
You know this cracker named Woodworth? That motherfucker. You say that you either kill him or we're done. We're done.
You're dead, though. If she gives him that ultimatum, you're dead. You realize that, right?
Once Kevin Hart decides I'm dead, I am dead. So, you know.
So, Okay.
I could have used more reverb.
More reverb would have been preferred, but not required. Not required. So Joe Robinson calls me, and I want you to know I posted this video or I posted the last week's podcast around like 6 o'clock in the evening, and Joe called me within the hour with a correction. So it hadn't even been on the feed for more than an hour. Joe Robinson calls in a correction about the first moment that we were talking about, Hey Man, Nice Shot. And I said it was about John Lennon, that song by Filter. It's not. And I stand fucking corrected big time, because it's actually, that song is about another person, famous person who shot himself. Jeremy, do you know who it is?
Michael Stipe.
Who shot himself, Jeremy. Himself.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's not. It's going to be a worse answer. I know it's going to be a worse answer.
Shot him. I'm going to say Abraham Lincoln.
It was not Abraham Lincoln.
It was a suicide.
It was a suicide. It was a suicide. It was about politician Bud Dwyer.
Oh, Bud Dwyer.
Which I'm kind of embarrassed about, because that now it makes the song even fucking cooler to me. Because, Jeremy, I shit you not, explain to the people at home who are listening right now or at work, what is the background of my phone right now? Could you explain that to our audience? Can you explain what the background of my phone? This has been the background of my phone for like at least a year and a half.
Wow.
Explain that to me.
I think he's a politician who had a nutty time when he was on the camera, and he just decided to blow his brains out.
But explain to you what you're seeing on my phone background.
You have the Nintendo version of the Bud Dwyer game.
Yes,
so,
it's a faux Nintendo cover that says Bud Dwyer Entertainment System with the light gun activated, and it's a picture of 8-bit Bud Dwyer blowing his brains out.
I'm pretty sure it's about 48K of memory, and you play it with the light gun, and that's the end of the game.
And that's so
and it's over. So, but first he's like moving his arms like, no, get away from me. It's just a little bit better than Custer's Last Stand for 2600. Hey,
what you have to do is you have to tap the buttons like Mario comes out as a little referee and he starts counting.
Ding, ding.
And you have to tap the buttons to stay down and die. Like, you have to increase the bleeding like that. Everybody stay away.
But the best part is when Narcissus Prince comes in and cries.
Yes. I didn't listen when we started this pod. Did I think there was going to be a Narcissus Prince reference? I didn't think that. But now that it's here, I'm not mad. I'm not mad. I'm happy. Joe Robinson is confused. A lot of our listeners are confused. But you Google Narcissus Prince, you'll see a Punch-Out character.
I can also make Vectrex jokes.
It's very special. Oh, man. Also, another quick shout out. If you are listening to the show for the first time or you're a big fan of the show, hop on our iTunes, hop on our Stitcher, give us a 5-star rating so we can read it on the show. We do have some new ones. Maybe we'll do one at the end of the show tonight so we can listen to that.
Shall I break into a story or wait till the end?
What kind of story you got?
A New Jersey weekend story.
Well, okay, give us a New Jersey weekend story.
I'll make it quick. Okay. Working on the Candyman meets the Killer Clown, otherwise Gacy versus Coral.
Okay, give us some Gacy versus Coral. I'm ready.
Got to redo a scene with a classic car over the weekend. I won't say why it's being redone because that could be get me into court. So, yeah, we working in a very, very seedy motel, which definitely probably had meth made in it over the week.
And you know, like regular Hollywood productions.
Like the, probably one of the top 10 worst hotels in New Jersey. So the best thing is that we weren't filming our guerrilla style in a good hotel because we got kicked out of one. So very badly. Very badly. And we lost an actor because of it. Oh, thank God. That was horrible. So horrible. But we've filmed probably one of the funniest fight scenes in the end of a movie between Gacy and Coral that I am very, very proud of this film now. Because we have turned it into something like a Coen/Raimi comedy. That I almost think that if there aren't some people that will be offended, other people will be peeing their pants when they see this film. So.
Well, I'm excited, Jeremy. I'm glad that this is your swan song. This is your stairway to heaven. Is you playing Gacy, the part you were born to play,
a rapist clown, the thing that keeps people feared of me. So, this was this dirty, dirty hotel. Let's just say I'm pretty sure we had a crackhead woman a couple doors down that was like, as soon as we honked the horn, she's opening the door to see what the fuck's going on. It's like, there's cops around here. And I literally was dressed as a cop to pick up one of these kids as a hitchhiker. And you could tell she was even more paranoid about it. So, oh gosh. So it was great.
So that's good. You faux abducting children, people looking at you and immediately looking at him like, yeah, that's the guy that abducts kids. Maybe I should call the cops. So basically the world worked the way it should. That's great.
And I rapped and people were very happy. Were very happy about, oh, we have a scene with me in bed with a kid that's definitely been dead for a good couple weeks. And there's a lot of jokes in there as well. So,
well, hot diggity. I'm excited to see it. What's the movie called?
The Killer Clown meets the Candyman.
Hot diggity. And we
no,
gotta see it.
No, it's not Sammy Davis Jr.
So. It's not Sammy, man. Sammy doesn't rape kids. He rapes regular-sized ladies. But tonight, Quality Timers, you are joining us for a very special breakdown. An original in the movie world. It's a special film. It holds a special place in my heart. Give me one, too! Jeremy's going up to get a beer, so now I have to kill all the time in between. This movie is a classic. It came out in 1987. It is both lethal and a weapon. And also, with our theme of Mel Gibson May, we continue on with Lethal Weapon. And man, am I excited about it. This is the theme song to it, isn't it? It's pretty chill for a theme song for such a high-paced action film, wouldn't you say, Jeremy?
I don't know. I can't tell the difference between this and The Stand.
So. The Stand. It is very standish, too. I'd buy that.
Kind of pretty much see Bill Fagerbakke and Rob Lowe walking down the
roads. Whoa. It's called Bill Homosexualaki, okay?
M-O-O-N. That spells gay.
So, 1987, Lethal Weapon. We all just rewatched. We're going to get in deep with this film. So,
of what?
This movie is actually the second film that we have gone over by writer Shane Black. Jeremy, what's the other movie that we have already covered by written by Shane Black?
Shit. I don't know. That was weeks ago. You expect me to remember something weeks ago?
Shane Black is famous for writing also The Last Boy Scout.
Ah, yeah.
In addition to that, he wrote The Last Boy Scout. Authors also wrote Lethal Weapon 2, The Long Kiss Goodnight, and Arnold Schwarzenegger movie from the 90s. Very famous. Jeremy, what is that? Shane Black film. Written by
The Reflecting Skin.
Nope, that would be The Last Action Hero. The Last Action
Hero. Oh, wow. So, well, that was a blockbuster.
It is a blockbuster. So Shane Black, who is known for his dialogue in action movies.
Now, is one of his brothers Jack Black and the other one is Lewis Black?
Yes, all the Blacks. Yeah. All the Blacks.
And the Blacks!
And actually, Keith David for no reason. Like, that's everybody. The movie is directed by Richard Donner, who Donner's done some pretty phenomenal movies. I'll see if Jeremy can name my favorite after I name the other ones. He's famous for obviously this film, 16 Blocks, Conspiracy Theory, Superman 1 and 2, the classic Scrooged, and Jeremy, what other famous horror movie
Has to be The Omen.
It's The Omen. You're correct, Hells Jeremy. Yeah. Yes.
Can you play the Ave Satani song?
Nope, I don't have it queued up, so you're screwed.
Damn it. Which is Father Evil's theme, by the way. So my favorite cosplay pair from New Jersey.
Now, according to a June 2000 Vanity Fair article, Bruce Willis was considered for the role of Riggs in this film, but turned it down. What movie did he turn this Lethal Weapon down so that he could be in?
I'm going to say Hudson Hawk.
Nope, it was... It's another co-written Shane Black film, Die Hard. So he was
another
in
Christmas film. So one in, Christmas film for another Christmas film.
He was
film.
In Die Hard instead of this movie. And do you know who was offered the lead role of John McClane before Bruce Willis?
I'm going to say Carrot Top.
It was Mel Gibson. Mel Gibson was offered the role and they swapped him. They basically swapped him. So could you imagine?
That's a good That's good casting. That's
honestly,
good casting.
Honestly, wouldn't you have been happy though if Mel Gibson was in Die Hard and Bruce Willis was in Lethal Weapon? Like, I'm comfortable with the both of them swapping.
The song about your penis would not make sense with Mel Gibson inside a duct. So the head of your penis. So.
That is true. I have a song on my album, D Jokes in A Minor, about my penis that it talks about Mel Gibson. I'm sorry, about Bruce Willis and my penis. So if you ever want to check it out, D Jokes in A Minor.
It's kind of like the butterfly effect. So many things change, like songs.
Yeah.
I had a song about your head being in, but instead it was Mel Gibson, and then we're in this weird fucking bizarro world where we have eight hands instead. So,
okay,
makes sense. Yeah.
So Jeremy, I have one more fun fact about this movie before we start breaking down scene by scene what
Bring
happens.
Down.
Jeremy, this is a deep cut. I'm trying to give you a clue that won't give it away. Okay, that's not going to give it away. So I'm not going to tell you what.
Does it have to do with Oprah peeing?
Doesn't have to do with Oprah peeing. But who was considered as a director for this film? He didn't feel comfortable doing action films because he was busy working on another movie from 1987 called Three Men and a Baby.
Oh gosh.
Who? And I'm telling you, when you talk about nerd lore, okay? When you talk about the Mount Rushmore of like fucking nerd people before the 80s, this guy is on the Mount Rushmore of nerddom. Who was considered to be a director for this movie before Richard Donner?
I don't know.
Think about the nerdiest thing before the 80s. So 70s, 60s, 70s and 60s. Who would have been on the Mount Rushmore of nerddom?
Jim Henson's Lethal Weapon.
So, not Jim Henson.
All of a sudden there's Muppets everywhere.
It's all acted out by Kermit the Frog. Oh, man, that would be good. I could tell you he was in a very special TV series that is very, very famous. I mean, famous to the point where there's cons about it. It's still a very popular franchise today.
I don't even know if I know who this director is. I'm the only other funny scent, I would say Tim Burton. So,
nope. What if I told you he made a cover song called "If I Had a Hammer"? And if
oh
I
my
had a
gosh, Leonard Nimoy as a
Leonard
director?
Leonard Nimoy was considered to be a director for this film.
Wow. I never even knew he directed that much.
He directed, apparently, and he was busy working on Three Men and a Baby. He couldn't handle Lethal Weapon Part 1.
Well, it's a great name for a porno, that's for sure. So, right next to 12 Years a Slave. So,
so the movie opens up to Jingle Bell Rock and showing the streets of Hollywood, which is pretty interesting because, you know what? A lot of people these days argue, is Die Hard a Christmas movie?
Before we get too far,
this is before Die Hard. This should be considered, if you consider Die Hard a Christmas movie, this should equally be considered a Christmas movie. If anything, I'd say it's more Christmassy than it.
Before we get too far, can I do my Leonard Nimoy impersonation?
Yes, please. I need it, actually, okay. At this point.
Okay, because I really know his albums very well, so... If I had a hammer, I'd hammer in the morning, I'd hammer in the evening, all over this land.
Very good.
Leonard Nimoy.
Well, if I had a hammer, I'd hammer in the morning, I'd hammer in the evening, all over this land. I'd hammer on danger, I'd hammer on a warning.
The movie opens up with Jingle Bell Rock. We then see our first set of titties seconds into the film. Seconds
very
into the film.
Very important to the plot.
We get to see they pan into a high-rise building to the penthouse, and through the chopper you can see a girl laying topless on the top floor. She goes up and snorts some what we assume to be cocaine.
Could be Domino.
She then wanders out to the balcony like she's fucking Jenny and Forrest Gump. She slowly climbs to the railing, peers below, then she jumps. And interesting thing about that scene is that the lady who did that actually did jump off of that building onto a bag, and they filmed it the whole way down. Like, they painted the bag to look like the street so that when she fell, you actually see her fall all the way down. And when she's about to hit the bag, they cut to the other scene of like the car getting dented in. So it looked pretty realistic. Like, they killed that lady.
I hate to say the continuity is like she should land on the windshield, but when she's actually landed later, you see she's right on the roof of the car.
Yeah, so. That doesn't make sense. And it hurt my feelings that you brought that up and ruined the realism that was Lethal Weapon to me. I don't even know.
Damn it.
I don't even know what to do. Next, shortly after that, we meet Roger Murtaugh, who is bathing in the morning. Like, who takes a bath in the morning before he has to go to work? Apparently, Roger Murtaugh does. And his kids come in and wish him a happy birthday. And he's getting a little gray around the edges because he's just turned 50. I don't know. I just think it's weird that your family comes into a bathroom at the first thing in the morning. Like, if you're taking a bath, you don't want to be bothered. It's a fucking work day.
Look, they're black. This is what black people do. Richard Donner goes black more than anybody.
So, Jerry, you just assume how Danny Glover's life in Lethal Weapon, that's how black people live.
Look, I don't know any black people. I don't know what they really do. I'm just assuming this movie is 100% true. So.
Oh,
I didn't
man.
Even know that black people took baths. I thought they all took showers.
Basically, all you get, though, is that Murtaugh has multiple kids, but lives in a nice suburban home out in the sticks, and he's loving life. Next, we see Riggs, played by Mel Gibson, who awakes in his trailer with a cigarette still burning in his mouth, cracks open a beer as his first thing. He's fully nude. Fully fucking nude. We don't know.
Money shot of Mel Gibson's ass.
We don't know if he's hard, but I assume it. I assume that he's hard when he wakes up.
And of course, it was the black box as he's walking away from the camera that's like 2 feet underneath his legs.
There's a black box that's like dragging 8 feet behind him, fucking with his fucking nine foot long Australian peepaw. So,
I gotta go hammer some nails this morning and then chop some wood with my cock.
It switches back to Murtaugh's house as he tries to get ready for work. Michael Huntsnacker has been trying to call him and leave him messages. His wife relays that to him. Also, his daughter's wearing something very revealing. She's kind of hot for like a 16 to 18 year old.
You forgot to mention Mel Gibson peeing in his toilet. But all you hear is the bubbling as it
traps
in the toilets.
So,
sorry. I always like thinking about Mel Gibson's penis.
Murtaugh heads for a crime scene. Jumper's last name was Huntsucker, who was obviously the guy who was trying to leave him messages earlier.
Who was this played by?
Danny Glover is
Tom Atkins.
Yes. Well, we haven't introduced him yet. I thought that was Huntsucker. He is, but he hasn't been introduced yet. Okay. He just goes to the site of the crime where she has killed herself, supposedly, allegedly killed herself, and realizes that the name is still his buddy from back in Nam or Korea. So he recognizes it.
Did you say Korea?
Is it the Korean War? Does it count? Korean War was right after that. We're right before Vietnam. It's right post-World War II. Listen, I'm just doing my best here. They don't really specify if it's Vietnam.
I think you mean the Falkland conflict.
It was yes. It was Falkirk. Yes. From Braveheart. Next we see Riggs at a drug deal at a Christmas tree lot. Like it's like a Christmas tree place. By the way, more Christmassy than Die Hard already. So I want to reiterate how much more Christmassy this movie is than Die Hard. So we can let Die Hard, be moved to a beta role in the Christmas action movie genre. So, next they break out the coke and he basically says, "Oh, this is great. I'll take it. That'll be 100. And he's just like, okay. And he starts pulling out his wallet and he brings out 20, 40, 60. He's like, it's 100K, jackass. And he was just like, oh, not $100. Okay. So literally he gets up out of his seat and pulls a Three Stooges move on him where he fucking pokes one in the eye, slaps both of them across the face, goes, slaps his own face like he's Curly. Guy pops up from the truck behind him out of the bushes, tries to blast him with a shotgun. Dude in front of, he ducks. One of his friends gets blasted in the face, catches the shotgun blast. Fucking Mel Gibson rolls around on the ground, shooting like bap, 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 bap. Fucking takes out, takes out the guy in the truck, takes out another guy. The other guy goes off running. He goes to chase him, but the guy gets the drop on him and then holds him hostage. And as he's taken hostage, he says, shoot me. And you can start to see Mel Gibson's instability as a person, and it freaks that guy out.
And his instability.
It freaks this coke dealer out. Like, have you ever met somebody so crazy? Like, I'm sure this coke dealer's never seen somebody so crazy that they wanted to die before. Like, oh, I need to put my gun down because this guy who wants to die wants me to kill him. It's out of control. It's very, what I'm saying is, it's a little ridiculous.
That is his strength, though. He really wants to die, so it makes him a great cop. So
It does. So shortly after that, he's able to disarm him, and the guy gets arrested. And we see Riggs, Mel Gibson, back at his trailer, staring at a picture of his wife.
Can we name my two favorite films of the 80s? One's called Bad Lieutenant. My other one's just called Crazy Cop.
Crazy Cop. Maniac Cop. Maniac Cop's a good one. Maniac Cop is a good movie.
Sorry. Go ahead.
So, next we see Riggs back at his trailer staring at a picture of his wife. He cleans and loads his gun, looks down the barrel, places it to his head, then takes it and places it in his mouth. Then he breaks down and cries. He can't do it. He can't do it.
And I really like the close-ups on the gun and the fact when he's actually pulling on the trigger. So
yeah, I mean, it's a pretty intense, like, I'm going to commit suicide moment there.
And of course, he's completely lying because he says that it's like a hollow point, and it's obviously not a hollow point. So
that is true. It's a very standard tip on that.
Yeah, the gun enthusiast, like, oh, they always call that out at the NRA meetings.
So, back at the station, we see a gang of cops practicing their carols, because that's what cops do during the Christmas season. They all sit around, practice their caroling. You know, they don't have work to do. The Supes are saying that Riggs is coming, and he is unstable. Toxicology report comes back to Murtaugh, and they find that the pills that she was snorting were actually drain cleaner. So if she hadn't jumped off the roof, she would have died anyway, because she was snorting fucking drain cleaner. Also, there was evidence there that there was a man in the bed before she jumped. How do they determine this? I don't know. It's before DNA evidence. They just like, hey, here's some evidence. There you go. That's all you need. So Murtaugh then sees Riggs. He's out in the main office area. They've never met before. And Riggs pulls out his gun, but he's dressed in plain clothes. And Murtaugh beelines it for him and goes, gun! And fucking Riggs takes him and fucking side toss hips him like he's fucking Chris Jericho and slams him on the ground and then pulls his gun and points it at him and he goes, Murtaugh, that's your new partner. And he's like, I'm too old for this shit. And we get our first line.
Okay.
We get our first time we get to hear, I'm too old for this shit.
It's unlike the other time when he's first eating with his family when he has some Quaker Oats and he's like, I'm too old for this shit. So, probably like the third or fourth time in the movie. So,
they walk to a squad car right after that, and you get to you get kind of the breakdown and some of the dynamic between the two.
The other one, when he walks by a TV and Voltron's on, he watches it. I'm too old for this shit.
Every time Disney XD is on, he's like, I'm too old for this shit.
Oh, gosh.
He sees a PG-13 movie ad. He's like, I'm too old for this shit. Like, I can't watch this.
After about the 100th time when he says it during the movie, the audience walked out. So
Murtaugh only watches rated X movies because that's age appropriate for him.
Siskel and Ebert voted this as the line that they used the most in any other movie that was overused, so.
Next we see them walking to the squad car and we get to hear a little bit tidbit about Riggs and how nobody ever wants to work with him because everybody thinks he's crazy, because by the way you are pretty fucking crazy. They show each other their guns, which is how cops make friends. They show each other their guns. It's kind of like when you meet a new woman, you show each other your private parts before you fuck. It's kind of like that with cops. They pull out their guns, they say, hey, this is my gun. Hey, this is my gun. Riggs looks at Murtaugh's gun and he goes, oh, old revolver. A lot of the old guys used to use that. Me, I prefer clip fed. And he is a fucking sweet ass 9mm Beretta. It's all fucking badass and shit.
Can you name my favorite 70s show with Robert Blake?
No, I can't, because only thing I know about Robert Blake is that he murdered somebody.
Well, he was in a show called Beretta.
True. True that.
Sorry. Yeah, he did kill his wife. But she was a whore.
Did he ever go to jail for that, though?
No. Everybody thought she was a whore. So
everybody thought she was a whore. He just took her out to like a desolate part of the ocean and pushed her off the boat, right? Yes. Like that's what he did.
Oh, by the way, a little unbeknownst joke is that in our movie, Gacy is watching Johnny Carson. And it's like, tonight on Johnny, we have Robert Blake, O.J. Simpson, and Robert Wagner. Yay!
Wait a minute. Who did Robert Wagner kill?
Natalie Wood. So
he killed somebody.
Yeah,
I've been living this lie of upholding Robert Wagner this whole time, and he's murdered somebody.
Well, either that or Natalie Wood just was really bad at swimming. So
okay, you know. fair enough.
Hence, lots of jokes about Wood floating, kind of like Pee Wee Herman masturbating. So.
Listen, Pee-wee didn't deserve to be ostracized the way he was for jerking off in a place where you clearly jerk off at, okay?
If you can't masturbate at a porn theater, I don't even want to live in this country.
It's not the America I want to be a part of. You know, he was unfairly treated. Clearly his white privilege didn't work because that's just not, you know.
I mean, what kids show guy doesn't masturbate at a porn theater at least once, you know?
I don't know, but I wouldn't look below that fucking puppet show that Mr. Rogers was put on, because that's his jerk den underneath there.
Hey, kids, do you ever put on a puppet and masturbate with the puppet?
Oh, Mr. McFeely, use both hands. It makes my penis look so big.
Oh, meow, meow, it's getting bigger. Meow, meow.
It is getting bigger, and you want to keep stroking it. Oh, here comes Mr. McFeely. Oh, he's calling the cops on me.
Oh, Mr. McFeely, please bring out your neighborly Pringles can and let me insert myself upon it.
You had me at Pringles. Since your wife wrote that joke up your ass.
Well, what we use as marital aids is between me and the old lady. Anyway, next we see we get to meet Gary Busey, who plays Mr. Joshua. And Gary Busey, I read a little bit up about on his part. All right, so Gary
was this
Busey,
the height of his cocaine use?
He is fully coked out. Is this pre motorcycle accident or after? I'm not really sure.
I think it's pre
motorcycle accident. Okay, so Gary Busey's take on this movie is that he's 100% sure that because of his role in this movie, all right, he revived Mel Gibson's career. He said that. Mel Gibson wouldn't be Mel Gibson if it wasn't for Gary Busey in this movie.
I think he also revived Danny Glover's role in Predator 2.
Yes, so. yes, he did.
What do we have here? Lions, tigers, and bears, and predators.
You know, the one thing I know is that if you ever see a predator, you can't show fear. That's the thing that they can smell. The one thing they don't tell you about is that you can wear all this silver shit that you want. But the last thing that I need to tell you is that if a predator ever comes out to you, it's the most thing I've learned. Folding chairs. That's predators can't see a folding chair.
Oh, wait
chair.
A second. In the Gary Busey conundrum? In the phylum? No, not the phylum.
Phylum?
In the categorically...
Category?
Films of Gary Busey. It's the pre-normal eye Gary Busey versus the lazy eye where he's always pointing downward and spiritually that eye is reading the Bible. So is between his coke ears and not coke ears.
Do you ever think that if Gary Busey and Forrest Whitaker like Freaky Friday'd each other, they'd wake up and just like, fuck, I still got a fucked up ass eye. Like, I can't.
I would pay for the movie where Forrest Whitaker gets Gary Busey's head attached to his shoulder. The thing with two heads and just the racist shit that comes out of Gary Busey's mouth.
I hate all blacks. You're going to be living on my shoulder, Whitey.
So, he brings him to see the Mr. Joshua goes and brings a gentleman to see. Jerry can't control himself. So
I'm gonna go do a GoFundMe for this right now. Forrest Whitaker and Jerry Busey, the remake of The Thing with Two Heads. Oh gosh.
So next we have a little clip right here. Where we get to see Mr. Joshua introduce a client to his boss, who's known as the General. And here's this little clip.
Ah, Mr. Mendez. How are you?
Hey, I'm fine.
Where the hell did you get him? Psychos or us? I don't think you're funny.
I don't think this whole goddamn setup's funny. You're using mercenaries, for Christ's sake. Tell me I'm wrong.
No, you're not wrong.
And you expect me to trust these fucking bozos?
My people are loyal, Mr. Mendez. They are loyal to me.
Oh, bullshit.
Do you smoke?
What the hell has that got to do with anything? Do I smoke?
Look how imposing he looks, that yeah. Gary Busey in the background.
My lighter?
Your lighter!
Of course, it's the 80s. I smoke clearly.
He's ready to break out a Telecaster any moment and start doing some Buddy Holly.
Shut your mouth, Jesus!
So he grabs this guy's arm, holds it underneath. Lights his lighter for him.
Mr. Joshua, your left arm, please.
And Mr. Joshua pulls out his arm and puts it above the burning flame. And he's holding now.
You mean you guys are fucking gone? You know what I'm saying? Oh, Jesus Christ, man! You guys are fucking crazy, man! Come on, man!
Holding. Still burning. Just stopped.
Have Endo look at that, Mr. Joshua.
Endo.
Yes, sir.
Now I'm going to need a whole another kilo of coke.
Jesus Christ.
You wish to make a purchase, yes?
Yeah.
Yes, by the way, how hard is it to make a drug purchase that you have to watch him burn one of his goons every time?
You're fucking brutal, man. You're gone.
The bulk of the heroin will be here Friday night. We'll make delivery at that time. Have the money ready and no tricks. If you try anything, you'll have to talk to Mr. Joshua.
Now this guy...
Oh, you'll have to talk to Mr. Joshua.
Now this guy is like a really great actor in Electric Glide in Blue with Robert Blake as the lead investigator who takes on Robert Ooh. Blake. But also is Ryan O'Ross. And this is way before The Hidden, where he played one of the alien incarnations that had the alien that did all sorts of crazy shit, including the one chick that also had a flamethrower and just amazing. Oh, also one of Danny Trejo's movie where he's in the jail and all of a sudden the only line that he has is, "Hey, fuck you, man!"
I swear, that's like the fourth week you've brought that up, is that Danny line Trejo. From Danny yes. Trejo. So, by the way, the one thing I take away from this scene is that, is there a harder person that wears a turtleneck in a movie than this guy? I mean, this is amazing. Like,
turtleneck equals evil and power.
Power. I'm so powerful I don't need a tie, even though my associates wear them. I wear a turtleneck.
A little bit part that Ryan O'Ross has in the show, 6 Feet Under, is a Russian, which he plays pretty well. But my favorite part is that as his part, he gets to make fun of Edward Begley Jr. in real life. He's like, "You mean the man who drive the little electric car?" I wanted to meet Edward Begley just to mention that from the show. It's like, oh, they're making fun of you in real life, Edward yeah. Begley, because you're all fucking environmental electric car. So
the next scene, we see Murtaugh goes to meet with Mike, played by...
Tom Atkins.
Yes, Tom Atkins. There you go. He tells him that his daughter was murdered, goes through all that because it was drain cleaner and the thing.
And of course, from last people that have heard ours talk about Tom Atkins, the only actor celebrity who I've been touched by and I felt uncomfortable from.
Yeah. So,
as he kind of caressed my back and I felt like I was being molested.
Yeah, you about to get fucked by Tom Atkins. So next, Murtaugh meets Mike and tells him that his daughter was murdered. He asks him, "Why'd you call me? I thought that you could get her out." Mike responds. He found out that his daughter was making porn, and he's clearly saddened. But Riggs is not having an easy time. "You owe me this, Roger," Mike says. "Remember. Who find whoever's responsible for this and kill them." And he basically, Roger's like, "Man, I can't be like killing these motherfuckers left and right. I'm a cop. I can't be doing this." So he goes out and leaves, but Murtaugh and Riggs have a little talk, and he tells him he served with them back in 65, which would be Vietnam War era, not Korean War, as I said earlier, which is clearly wrong. And Mike
Joe Robinson correction.
Yeah, here it comes. And Mike apparently took a bayonet for Murtaugh, which means, so it assumes a lot of things. A, that you were fighting trench warfare, apparently, because bayonets are used in, like, trench warfare. Not Vietnam bayonet attacks. Got to be very few and far between.
I was going to say that he saved him by he was going to eat some really old shellfish. Don't eat that goddamn shellfish! He saved me. I was going to eat that shellfish. And it was at least a week old. So,
the next scene, they get a call as soon as they get in the squad car. So they head, Murtaugh and Riggs head to a building to find that there is a guy, a jumper on the edge of the building, threatening that he's going to commit suicide. So Riggs decides to go up and say, hey, I'll talk him down. And while he's up there, he hops over the wall, stands there with him. And while they're talking, he offers him a smoke. And then Riggs goes ahead and handcuffs himself to the jumper. And he goes, you want to jump? You're going to have to kill me too, which is going to make you a murderer. And he's just like, you're crazy, man. You're crazy. I'm crazy. You're crazy. I'm crazy. Why don't you just jump? Jump! And so they go and jump off. And if you notice this real quick, there's definitely a little flub in this film. As you see him jump, they're clearly not handcuffed. Either of them are not handcuffed to each other. They jump off, but luckily at the bottom, there's a giant air pad waiting for them. I guess because they already filmed the other scene, they might as well make another jump scene is the only thing I can come to the conclusion of. And they are able to live through the experience. And the second he hits the ground, we get this wonderful scene between Danny Glover and Mel Gibson talking to him right after he jumps off of the airbag. Enjoy.
Hey, what the fuck you just do? Well, I controlled the jump.
You wanted him down, he's down.
Hey, come here.
Come where?
Here with me. Get in here. Hey, okay. No bullshit. You want to kill yourself?
Oh, for Christ.
Shut up! Yes or no? You want to die? Yes or no?
How? I got the job done. What the hell do you want?
You didn't answer the question.
Oh, what do you want to hear, man? Do you want to hear that sometimes I think about eating a bullet? Huh? Well, I do. I do. I even got a special one for the occasion with a hollow point. Look, make sure it blows the back of my goddamn head out. Do the job right.
Not a
every single day I wake up and I think of a reason not to do it every single day. You know why I don't do it? This is gonna make you laugh. You know why I don't do it? The job. Doing the job. Now that's the reason.
You wanna die?
I don't. I'm not afraid of it. I ain't afraid of it.
Take my gun. Don't nibble on the barrel. Pull the trigger. Go ahead, pal. Be my guest. Go ahead if you're serious.
You shouldn't tempt me, man.
Put it in your mouth. Bullet might go through your ear and not kill you.
Yeah, under the chin.
Yeah, under the chin.
Uh-oh, he's pulling the trigger back. It's cocked. And just as the hammer's about to come down.
Sergioni shot.
Ow!
He puts his finger in between. Murtaugh saves his life.
You know what you call that when you just do in the eyes? That's called a Leone.
You really
Sergio
are
Leone shot. Yeah.
I'm hungry. I'm going to go and get something to eat.
What a great move. What a great moment in the film.
I hate to say that Australians can probably out-act us. It's terrible, you know?
The thing is, and ever since I learned that he's Australian, like, he's so Americanized, Mel Gibson, that he doesn't even speak with an Australian accent, even in his, like, regular nomenclature, you know what I mean? Like, he doesn't speak with that accent, but you can still hear certain words that he says where he's like, that's not quite right.
He does it better than what's his name from Reservoir Dogs. He's like, I'm not a cop, you know. But every once in a while, you know, who's better than an Australian actor?
Who?
A New Zealand actor. Which is like this tiny island down here in Australia. So, like Lucy Lawless, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
where they filmed, you know, Xena, Attack of the Warrior Princess.
She's pretty hot. So, back in the car, they're driving around, and the rapport between them kind of starts to build up. Riggs wishes him a happy birthday. He says, "Hey, man, happy birthday." And Riggs couldn't be happier. He's just like, "Yeah, sorry I had that existential breakdown where I almost blew my brains out in front of you. I wanted to apologize about that. I realized I was a little over the line." And you can see that this odd couple, they start to become friends. Next, they head to a giant mansion where they find some hot chicks snorting coke. And
they look like prostitutes.
They look like prostitutes.
Maybe porn stars.
And they snort in front of them. They're like, "Hey, come in here." And then through the window, they show them their badges and their guns. And they're like, "Oh, shit." And they start to run off. But all of a sudden, as they're about to go,
who's by the pool? Harvey Weinstein.
Yes. Yes. As soon as it happens, though, they run off, and then all of a sudden, a dude with a shotgun hanging out by the pool goes and opens fire on him. By the way, who just hangs out by the pool with a shotgun? Makes zero sense at all. Makes not a lick of sense. So, they go over there and they have a little gunfight. Murtaugh tells Riggs to go chase down the girls. He gets them and then basically handcuffs them to a tree. And Murtaugh shoots the guy in the leg at the pool. He's like, "See, there, you ain't got to kill people. You just got to shoot him in the leg. Now we can question him." And he's like, "You know what? Great fucking police work, man." And as Riggs goes over to, as Murtaugh goes over to lift him up and apprehend this gentleman, the guy produces another gun, and then Riggs is forced to blow this guy away. He falls into the pool, which is covered with like a giant pool cover. He's
a plastic clear see-through one.
As a see-through cover, he goes down in there, and on top of being shot in the chest, he then additionally drowns to death in the pool. Murtaugh and Riggs both
jump
out.
Can we say this is kind of like a weird tie-in between Bruce Willis and Unbreakable?
Go on. I'm listening. Otherwise, I'm listening.
The sentry that falls into the pool and his weakness is water and drowning. So
yeah. Next, Riggs comes to dinner with Murtaugh. They're at the Murtaugh household, and his daughter is eyeball fucking the shit out of Riggs the whole time, and it is highly inappropriate. I mean, it's a dinner scene, it's kind of uncomfortable, but all we get really out of it is that Murtaugh's daughter clearly thinks Mel Gibson's hot. I mean, who doesn't? He's at his sexual prime right now. This is 30-year-old.
Wasn't he man of the year? The sexiest man of the year
he
in time?
He might have been. I mean, the mullet was so strong with Mel Gibson during this film that it was undeniably. I mean, there was two men that owned the sexy mullet of this era, and the only one that trumped Mel Gibson's is clearly Patrick Swayze. That's the only other one that has strong. Longer mullet.
Did you say at this time there was only two men that had entered but one man that had left the competition? Sorry.
So next, Murtaugh is hanging out with Riggs out at their boat, and they're talking a little bit about the murder, and Riggs is thinking, you know what, it just doesn't add up. But Murtaugh thinks it's solved. Bad guy kills girl, the bad guy tries to kill us, we kill him. That's good old-fashioned police work. So his daughter comes out, and she's still grounded for smoking grass. So the trust is building between them. We get some real moments. Like, he's getting into the inner circle of Roger Murtaugh. So Riggs and them are continuing to build a rapport. We also found out that Riggs used to be a sniper in the Special Forces. And he also basically shits on the Murtaugh's wife's cooking. Like, she basically says, "Yeah, your wife's not a great cook. Fuck you. Go fuck yourself." Murtaugh has sent a mysterious tape. He goes and pops it in, and it is a porn of the murdered girl in it. And he's sitting there. It's a picture of the tape and the year in a yearbook, which is presumably sent by Michael, who's his buddy, which is like, man, maybe I really do need to kill these motherfuckers that fuck with my boy. You know what I mean? I owe this guy.
But instead, he masturbates to it.
Instead, it then pans back and he's completely nude, fully hard, and we get to see the first Danny Glover jerk off scene of the film,
and then at the end,
and then roll credits.
Wait a second. Did we mention when Mel Gibson explains his talents that Danny Glover has the titular line, "We ought to call you a lethal weapon."
Yeah, I forgot. So, I forgot about that.
The titular.
Titular. Titular.
Much like that that moment from Star Wars when Han is teaching Luke how to fly the Millennium Falcon. He's like, "Man, I'm just tired of all these Star Wars."
I'm sorry. I'm still laughing at the word titular. I apologize.
Titmouse.
So,
Mr. Next... Peterson, why are you laughing like a schoolgirl?
Next, we are. In the bedroom, Roger Murtaugh's bedroom, Danny Glover is sleeping, and all of a sudden, fucking Riggs is in there with a goddamn cup of coffee. So how familiar is this fucking asshole? He's worked with him for at least a day right now. And the next morning, he's at his fucking place waking him up with coffee. Like, this is not... He's crossing multiple boundaries right now.
This is really serious comedy because obviously in the next movie, he's on the shitter and Riggs comes up between his legs like, "Hey, what are you doing this morning? Hey, you taking a shit? Bam, bam, bam." So,
"Hey, your drain's really clogged up right here. Anyway, off to fuck your daughter." So they chat about the murder for a bit at the shooting range after that, and they have a little shooting competition where you see Murtaugh's a pretty good shot, but clearly Riggs is the superior because not only in grouping, they have a little like test of distance where he puts it way back and then fucking Danny Glover bows boom and they pull the target back and you see it's like a perfect headshot, and then Mel Gibson goes and puts it all the way to the back of the fucking shooting range and goes boom 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 boom, and then they bring it back and he's drawn a smiley face with his grouping and his placement. So there's a clear marksmanship award to Riggs at this point.
He spells out Thunderdome.
Thunderdome. So Mel Gibson wins the shooting competition. Next, they go to question a witness who we met earlier that I didn't mention. He showed up to this... when he showed up to the murder girls scene, there was a hooker that was there who was quickly ushered off, who we'll never see again in this movie. But... they go question this hooker with a heart of gold that they can't seem to find. As they roll up to her house, there's some kids playing across the street. They get up and they start going, "Cops, cops," like blowing their spot up, like, "Thanks, you fucking dicks." And as they approach the house, it all of a sudden fucking explodes, like a big time explosion. Fucking blows this single family home to smithereens.
Like it was a good meth lab.
Now, the one part about this movie where it's clear this was made in 1987 and not in 2007 is as the house explodes, Danny Glover goes to try to like pick Mel Gibson up and like tap the fire off him, and Mel Gibson looks at him, "What are you, a fag?" Because it was cool to make fun of gay people back then.
Even Eddie Murphy could use the fag word. Yes. Before he picked up trannies in his limo. So.
I just like how homophobic are you that if you're on fire you go, "What are you, some kind of fag?" Like,
you know the worst kind of homophobia is when you're having sex in bed with a gay person like William Dafoe and he says something gay like, "You fag." Boondock Saints. Thank you very much. William Dafoe, a perfectly heterosexual actor. So otherwise known as Jesus.
William Dafoe should be the Joker one day. Can we all agree on that? Like, he would make a great Joker.
Should have been the Joker.
Should have been. Next, we see Riggs recognizes the explosives in the wreckage as something he hasn't seen since he worked in the Special Forces. They go to question the little kids that were across the street who saw the explosion and blew their spot up. Murtaugh convinces the kid to give him a description of the gentleman he saw, and basically what he gets out of him is that the guy had a tattoo, and it was just like your tattoo, which is Riggs's tattoo, which is his Special Forces shit with like a fucking snake going through it, and it says fucking it is the signia of Shadow Company,
which is also a clown with balloons riding a unicycle.
It's pretty badass. I'm getting a tattoo of a clown.
Now, funny story. I was doing research for this episode. Shadow Company was a literary device that Shane Black used in this script, but was actually from another script that he wrote.
Maybe Predator?
No, not Predator.
Damn it.
He wrote this script. It was never made a movie, but tell me how awesome this movie sounds, Jeremy. And also, after I explain what this movie is that never got made, tell me what movie you think it really is, okay? Because it's a movie that exists, and we've definitely made fun of on some of the very early episodes. Here was the premise of the movie, okay? There was a Special Forces team called called Shadow Company, and Shadow Company were a group of mercenaries that, Black Ops or whatever, they got experimented on, died. Okay, they died, and then through science and special ops, were brought back to life. But when they were brought back to life, they were murderous, rampaging zombie monsters. Jeremy, what does this sound like the script to?
It sounds a hell of a lot like Dirty Dancing. You know? Because obviously, Swayze is a zombie mercenary. He's like, I will show you how to dance, but I will have to kill so many people to show you how to dance. And nobody puts baby in the corner and lives. And why Patrick Swayze has a strong German accent, I don't even understand.
I can't even handle it.
Well, it's like the ending of Rocky V, obviously, where as soon as Apollo Creed dies, end of movie. So,
Jeremy, I would venture to say that this movie,
I'm going to guess the soldiers had to be kept cool or something bad might happen.
So, doesn't it sound an awful lot like this movie? The plot of this: Special Forces dead are brought back to life as murderous zombies, and there's one of them left alive that has to take them down. Doesn't it sound oddly like this movie?
Something unforeseen, something unspeakable lives below, and it lives to destroy. They have risen. From beyond the dead, from beneath the living, from the depths of hell's ocean, everything they touch will die in the deep. Shockwaves. Because once they were almost human. Shockwaves. The deep end of horror.
So really just Shane Black saw the movie Shockwaves and he's like, I can make Shockwaves but with Americans.
Why,
like,
Eli Roth hasn't remade this movie yet, I don't know.
Oh God, I would love a remake of Shockwaves. Anyway, back on with Lethal Weapon. Next, we see Riggs, Murtaugh.
Obviously, Universal Soldier, whatever.
Next, we see Riggs and Murtaugh question Mike at the funeral. So they're talking to Tom Atkins again. She's dead because of something you were into, right? And he basically admits that Shadow Company got into heroin dealing. They were doing that, and he was in too deep. He thought he could get out. And as he's ready to spill the beans and give him all the names and stuff like that, a fucking helicopter shows up and Mr. Joshua snipes him through a window and kills him. And fucking Mel Gibson, who's at a funeral, keep in mind, watching a funeral procession, takes out his 9mm and unloads a clip into this fucking helicopter as it flies off.
And one of the best snipers still doesn't hit the yellow helicopter that we know.
Not even once. So. The guy who can make smiley faces can't even hit a helicopter. It's ridiculous. They go to try to find this hooker still that can basically pin Shadow Company to the rest of this. And as they're patrolling the streets, Mr. Joshua rolls up in a fucking car and blasts Riggs in his chest with a shotgun in a drive-by. Fucking Riggs crashes through a giant glass window. He's all fucked up, and he's sitting there. Fucking Murtaugh goes and returns fire as Mr. Joshua's driving away going, killed the fuck out of that guy. And he goes and checks on Riggs. Luckily, Riggs was wearing a vest. So Riggs is 100% fine. Took the shotgun blast like a goddamn champ. And then he explains to Murtaugh that, hey, we don't need to worry. We had the upper hand because they think I'm dead right now. So
right after he shoots Riggs, you know what he says?
What's that?
Pegasus. Guess what? I shot you, Peggy.
Very good, because he played Buddy Holly in the Buddy Holly movie. Yeah. Yeah, oddly enough, I never watched the Buddy
His
Holly
girlfriend
movie.
His girlfriend is Buddy Holly.
Is that worth watching, the Buddy Holly docu-film? Didn't he get an Academy Award for playing Buddy Holly in that?
Yeah, I think so.
Not as good as Six Strings Samurai. If anything, you should just watch that.
Just watch Great Balls of Fire. Much better. So
much better.
With Dennis or Randy Quaid.
Lou Gossett Jr. The little guy who plays the fucking La 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 Bamba.
Oh, yeah, yeah. From Bats. Lou Gossett.
It's not Lou Barry, Gossett. It's not Lou. It is Gomez. Lou something, though.
Gomez, yeah.
It is a Lou name, though.
It's very Spanish.
Damn it. Jeremy, this is going to drive me nuts. Bamba.
Just call him La Bamba. I know exactly who you're talking
about. You know what I'm talking about. Yeah, our listeners know. I got it.
Whose career has floundered for 20 years now.
So, next, Joshua then calls the police station, posing as a reporter, asking the Sarge of the shooting of a cop. And the Sarge plays along and says, yeah, Riggs is dead. We have a dead cop here. And he's like, thanks, that'll be all. He just hangs up immediately, like, now we've got him. They say... Now, Murtaugh and Riggs have a little heart-to-heart. He says, we're going to do this my way. Shoot to kill. We're going to have to get bloody on this one. So he gets a call. He gets a call to meet, and he drives out to the desert. Oh, I skipped over something. I'm sorry. In all this, during this, he gets a call right after Murtaugh, after Riggs gets shot, he gets a call of a description of a gentleman who sounds like the guy who is dating his daughter has been found dead. They go back to the house and find that Murtaugh's daughter's been fucking abducted by the goddamn bad guys. And now shit's personal. So now they say, hey, we gotta do this my way. It's shoot to kill. If you want to get your daughter back, we gotta fuck some shit up. Which is, I'm sure, breaking multiple amendments. Like, this can't be. This is why people hate the police, because they take their things into their own hands, Jeremy.
It's totally real.
This
happens all the time.
So, Mr. Joshua has the girl. So Murtaugh drives out to a desolate desert wasteland. But as he's pulling up, he lets out fucking Riggs. And Riggs goes and leaves about a mile away from the meat zone. And he drives out into the fucking... By the way, the meat zone sounds like the gayest place to, like, have sex with men, like, ever in the world. Like, where are you going to fuck tonight? The meat zone. It's not a big deal. So they go out to this desolate wasteland. Riggs is running the sniper rifle. They pull up not only in a helicopter, but underneath the helicopter are two vehicles underneath it. Like, it's just like, that's just how we roll, because we got helicopter money. It's the 80s. We sell heroin. we fuck. It's not a big deal. As they get up, as they get out, Murtaugh produces a grenade and says, if she's going to die, she'll die my way. And they don't buy his bluff, and they shoot Murtaugh in the arm. Murtaugh rolls the grenade out in front of them, and they think, holy shit, we better run for our fucking life. As he's doing that, Murtaugh's daughter, who is being held by two men, catches a fucking sniper bullet to the chest from fucking Riggs, who's hidden out in the brush on the side. She's able to get away into a vehicle and into one of their vehicles and starts driving off through the desert. Riggs then, there is a car chase scene where they try to get his daughter, but ultimately what happens throughout this entire fiasco is that his daughter's captured again, Riggs is captured again, captured now, and so is Murtaugh. They are all now in Shadow Company, basically has them all kidnapped
by
at this
Mr.
point.
By Mr. Turtleneck.
Yeah, Mr. Turtleneck. Well, Mr. Turtleneck gets the drop on fucking Riggs. Because he's special forces. You thought you would have fucking thought of that. The only person that can stop with special forces is another special forces. That's written in the special forces code book. You know that, Jeremy.
Yeah, I know. I have no idea. I'm a total fat ass. I'm part of special forces, but it's really a code name for retards, and we should have nothing to do with the military, so. Special forces.
So, the next scene, Riggs and Murtaugh are both tied up in separate rooms. Murtaugh is getting worked over with some fucking good old-fashioned punches to the gut. In the other room, Riggs is tied up with, like, water falling on him, and he's strung up by his hands kind of hanging like this, and a fucking dude comes over with a car battery hooked up and starts fucking electroshocking him with it's pretty fucking brutal.
Which is the same way that Chris Elliott is tortured in Get a Life with by sweet mistress, what's her name? So, but hey, can you name the guy that's torturing him? Other movies that he's been in?
I recognized him, but Jeremy, for the life of me, I couldn't remember what it is. I definitely recognize him though. He's an Asian gentleman with a very long beard.
Let's talk in an important movie that we already did, which he's very important in, is Big Trouble in Little China.
He makes a cameo in it, but isn't there? There's something else.
Let's talk about another movie that we might have seen. Is he's one of the final fighters against Batman and Michael Keaton in the first Batman?
Oh yeah, but then Batman just instantly knocks him out. Though,
but let's talk about his biggest and greatest role of all as Genghis Khan in Bill and Ted's Excellent.
Yes, that's where I was thinking. I couldn't fucking remember it.
All of this off the top of my head.
Good work, Jeremy.
Because I love that actor, and I'm surprised he hasn't done Chiller yet. So probably one of the greatest Asian actors, I mean Oriental, since Mako.
He can't be alive. That's the only reason.
He's
got to
be alive. He was probably only in his 30s back then.
He's got to need like that Khan money. No, because Asians are like the only people that Asians look young their whole lives, and they go from they go from looking like they're 20 or 30 years old to looking like 90 at one point. I don't know how to. You're either Mr. Miyagi or you're fucking Brandon Lee. Those are the only two choices you get.
I'm sure you remember him from Batman because there's like two bosses in Batman that aren't the Joker. Because one is him when he does like the double deal with both arms that comes in Batman.
It's
and Batman literally takes one punch and fucks him up.
Yeah.
And then there's the black guy in the back tower that really tried to fuck with Batman. And he's like, there's a big motherfucker. So, good times.
So, during the torture in the other room, Murtaugh is clearly not going to talk. So, they bring out his daughter, and the general says, I'm going to kill your daughter in front of you. So
Or
rape her. You know, one of the two. Whatever's going to be worse for you. And while that's happening, Mr. Joshua has now left Riggs alone in the other room with just him and the shock therapist. Riggs is able to fucking choke this guy out with his fucking feet and gets free, comes in, starts blasting, literally kills everybody in the other room.
And uses the guy's body to throw at somebody.
Yeah, so. He throws a fucking body at him. but it's badass. It's fucking badass.
I mean, you only probably weighed 150, but still.
It's fucking cool. It's fucking cool how hard he goes at this point. Have you ever been like, oh, I just killed this guy. What's the best thing I could use? Use him as a human shield? Or use him as, like, Captain America would use a shield. He fucking throws him at the people, and, yeah, it's pretty sweet.
Here's Asian at ya. Wow!
So, Riggs kills everyone. The general and Joshua are able to escape, and they go into the strip club, and they try to, like, play it cool, like Murtaugh. Riggs and his and Murtaugh's daughter try to walk out like it's nonchalant, immediately met by people, so they open gunfire inside a fucking loaded strip club. They go to chase Mr. Joshua outside, and he's able to get into a commandeer vehicle and get into it and take off, and Riggs is instructed by Murtaugh to go head down that street, sprint down that way, you can cut him off at the highway. So on foot, bare feet, might I add you, this white man chases down a car at the freeway and opens up machine gun fire on Mr. Joshua's car, on Gary Busey's car, is able to disable it. He jumps down and gets down to his level, and as he's going after him, they're shooting in between cars. Like, by the way, there's people in these cars, right? Like, don't worry about any of them. We're just going to shoot machine gun fire in between the cars. And as Riggs is getting closer and closer, and he's closing in, Mr. Joshua is able to commandeer an Audi, and fucking Riggs gets hit by a car, of course. In a traffic jam, he's hit by a car. And Mr. Joshua is allowed to escape. Now, back at the scene of the crime where they were just apprehended, Murtaugh has the general dead to rights, but he hops in a car with a driver, and they try to run him down this single car wide alley. And as they're coming up, fucking Murtaugh's aim is true. He shoots through the windshield and boom, takes out the driver. He then hops out of the way at the last second in a little kind of cubby place, like in a windowsill. The car speeds out in front of traffic, gets hit by a fucking tractor trailer. The car is in flames, and as fucking the general is in this car, he reaches over for the grenades that are slowly getting closer to the fire, but he can't do it in time, and the general gets fucking blasted to shreds.
Great little scene where he's trying to his car is always full of grenades. He's like, oh damn it, the car's on fire. I hope these grenades don't catch fire with all this cocaine in front of me. Damn it, I hope it doesn't catch up. And of course, everybody's going to help him in his car while he's like sitting upside down. It's like, no, nobody's helping him. I don't know why. It almost nothing explodes. And
yeah, and then next thing you know, shit's done hit the fan. So Riggs and Murtaugh race back to the residence because they, Murtaugh knows that they know where, you know, his family is. So he needs to go and protect his family. By the way, probably would have been a good choice to think of this beforehand, right?
And like, they send a cop car with some of LA's best to protect his home. Yeah. So.
And Joshua is easily able to get the drop on these two cops, fucking puts two in between the eyes. He fucking machine guns opens the front door, which is not a subtle way to enter a house, kicks it in, and as he's looking around, it's kind of quiet in the house. He walks over to the Christmas tree, and he takes a note off there, and the note reads, "Dear bad guys, nobody here but us cops. Sorry. The good guys." And as he's reading him, he goes, "Is this guy crazy?" All of a sudden, a cop car crashes through where Mr. Joshua was just moments before, and just narrowly escapes that. He's able to get outside, but as he's sitting there looking at the wreckage, Mel Gibson comes up from behind him, puts a gun to his head, and now he has the drop on Mr. Joshua. Mr. Joshua drops his gun. They go outside, and it's spurting fucking water everywhere because the squad car ran over a fire hydrant, so there's like basically like a rainstorm in the front yard, and they're looking at each other. He goes, what, you want a little shot? Huh? What do you say, Jack? You want a shot at the title? So Riggs drops his gun. Okay? I want you to understand what's about to transpire here is probably one of the most ridiculous things in movie history. It's just like, all right, I suspend my belief a lot to watch movies. I like Transformers, you know, I love zombie movies, I love fucking ridiculous action movies, okay? The level of things you have to suspend in this next scene it's an all Madden level. Like, you have to be fully on mushrooms and acid to believe this is even feasible in any way, shape, or form. He challenges Riggs to a fight, and as the cops are rolling up to Murtaugh's house, Murtaugh goes, "No, I got this. I got this. I'll take responsibility. You let them fight." So he authorizes a cage match in front of his fucking house so that these two guys can settle it over fucking dukes, right? So the fight goes back and forth. At one time, like, fucking Gary Busey's character gets a giant pipe and starts to try to beat him up, and Danny Glover throws Mel Gibson a nightstick, and he's really good with the nightstick. Like, he's like blocking the shots, and you know, it goes back and forth, but just
and as they're all hung on these giant elastic bands.
Yes, yes,
on the front yard. Yes. And one has the chainsaw, but then we find out that Joshua is actually retarded.
Yes, yes. Thank you, Jeremy. Thank you for that. So
he's just a child.
So as they're going back and forth and fighting, Mr. Joshua seems like he's gotten the upper hand, but in an unprecedented move, fucking Mel Gibson pulls out some fucking jujitsu, puts him in a triangle lock, which, I mean, today sounds like pretty common knowledge, but it's a UFC submission style jujitsu move where you choke somebody out with your legs wrapped around their neck, and it is a form fucking triangle lock. Puts the triangle lock on him, chokes him out. The day is won. He's now fist fightingly beaten him. Riggs gets up, walks over to Murtaugh. They have a small embrace. Like, man, you did a fucking some good ass fucking police work you did there. Mm-hmm. And of course, as the other cops go to apprehend him, Mr. Joshua is able to grab a gun off one of the cops. He points it, but before he can get off around, Riggs and Murtaugh both pull a gun. So he, like, Riggs pulls a gun off of Murtaugh. Murtaugh pulls his other gun. They turn over and blast Mr. Joshua into fucking oblivion.
And as they shoot the bad guy, they kiss.
And that's what I call a real buddy cop movie.
And Danny Glover looks at the camera and says, "I'm too old to be kissing other men in this gay way." So, and they do like this ote into the camera.
So Riggs goes to visit his... Oh my gosh. So next we see in the epilogue of the film, Riggs goes to visit his wife's grave and wish her a Merry Christmas. Riggs then heads to Murtaugh's house to give him give a gift to his daughter to pass on to Roger, and it's a bullet. He hands him the hollow point bullet that he's going to blow his brains out. It says, "Give this to your dad. I don't need it anymore," which is kind of ominous. It's just like, yeah, I don't need to kill. I don't have kids, so you can kill yourself if you need to, because I know you're looking for a way out. I don't know. I just thought that was rather morbid. But Danny Glover runs back out because Murtaugh can't let him run out like this. And he says, "Hey, I'm going to tell you a secret. I'm not crazy." And he says, "You got to get in here. Have some of my wife's, the worst turkey in the world." He's like, "Can I bring a friend?" And he goes, he brings out, he's now has a collie dog. So now he has Lassie. Lassie then, he says, "I don't know how the cat's going to deal with it." A second they walk into the house, it's fucking cat fighting with dog, going, and then it ends again with the fucking
Elvis.
It ends with the iconic line one more time. "I'm too old for this shit.
I'm too old for this shit.
and hear Riggs and Murtaugh go back into their house, realizing they had beat the Joshua. And after all, everything is said and done, Christmas will be the greatest Christmas ever, as he realizes, I'm too old for this. And even the gyro captain, who had helped everything, will make this. He realized he was the lethal weapon.
I knew it. Classic Jeremy. Jeremy, that was beautiful, man. That was beautiful. Thank you.
I'm glad it was worth it.
It was worth, you know what? It wasn't, but I'm glad that we did it. More than anything, I was happy that we did it. And that's the most important part, you know? So,
as Justin Schlegel knows how to use a good soundtrack.
It is true. Justin...
Gosh, he loves the same music. He has me with every single soundtrack thing he uses. And I just want to steal off him like the priest man would.
So that's it, man. Lethal Weapon. Moving our way through Mel Gibson May, man. What are your final thoughts on the subject, Jeremy?
You can take our lives, and you can take our daughters with drugs, but you can't have our freedom!
Oh, man. By the way, Quality Timers, if you enjoyed this episode, get ready for next week, because Mel Gibson May continues with next week's episode of The Road Warrior, followed swiftly by Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome with our special guest, Justin Schlegel. Jeremy can't stop talking about The Road Warrior. He's been waiting, so I'm expecting some big things out of him next week.
Oh, damn it. I thought we were doing Bird on a Wire.
No, Bird on a Wire, that's for next Mel Gibson May.
Followed by The Passion.
Anyway.
Oh, my gosh.
So... By the way, you can catch all things Kimberly Ambrose at the second Saturday Shit Show, which is free every second Saturday.
And Panic on the Deli on Instagram.
Yeah, and watch me doing this on the fucking Twitters. If you aren't following Kimberly Ambrose's Twitter, you are fucking yourself in the asshole, because you're being silly and crazy. And also, Eric Woodworth, yours truly, is headlining the Auto Bar in September. I'm filming a little special, so if you guys can make it out, we'd love to have all our Quality Timers out for that. All things Eric Comedy at ericcomedy.com. Give us a 5-star rating on Stitcher, iTunes. We can use it. We can read it on the show. Jeremy, take us out.
Where's Kim? I don't know where she is. I miss her. God damn it.